We are at the top of Tzadiches Amud Aleph, 88a, as they say, in the middle of a Braisa. The question that we asked yesterday, as I have there on the sheet, is how do you know that Karbanos communicate Kedusha in the sense that whatever you touch, whatever absorbs from them, gain their status. How do we know that rule that all karbanos have this status, not just chatas, with the Torah wrote it explicitly? And we answered with a long brisa, which we haven't actually finished. I gave you a table there on the sheet with two brisos, because after we finish the first brisa, then we're going to have a second brisa that's going to touch on many of the elements of the pasuk that we're focusing on here, this pasuk of Vayikra Zayin Lamed Zayin. So we already saw in the first brisa that from the fact that the pasuk, it's kind of a summation pasuk in Parashas Tzav, mentions the Ola, we learn that just like the Ola needs shchita with a knife, that is a klisharis, meaning I can't just use anything to shecht, any material to shecht, even though in Chulin we learn that any material may be used to shecht. When it comes to karbanos, I have to use a knife made of material that's qualified as a klisharis, meaning it has to be a metal knife. So too for all karbanos, not just for the Ola, all karbanos need a knife that is a klisharis. We then said, the pasuk says, Mincha, what did Mincha teach me? That just like Mincha is consumed only by Zichrei Kahuna, so all of them are consumed only by Zichrei Kahuna, and we noted that in truth you could learn it from other sources as well, some learn it from other sources. And then we got to Chatas on the second line on Tzadiches Amud Aleph, and we said, Chatas, which is mentioned in that pasuk, Ma Chatas Miskadeshes, it should be Mikadeshes Bibulua, Afkol Mikadeshes Bibulua, just like the Chatas, when there's absorption from the Chatas, then that whatever absorbs it is going to have the same status, so too, the same rule applies by other karbanos. We now continue that brisa. We're up to Asham on the third line on Tzadiches Amud Aleph. Asham. Ma Asham ein shfir v'shilya kadosh bo. Av kol ein shfir v'shilya kadosh bo. Just like a karban Asham, if it were to produce a placenta, an afterbirth, that would not have any kedusha. So too by other karbanos. And you realize why this is comical, of course. The Asham is a male. You show me an Asham that produces a placenta or an afterbirth, I'll show you an animal that's not a Karban Asham. So he says, just like if the Karban Asham were to produce such a thing, it wouldn't have Kedusha, because it can't. There ain't no such thing. So too, regarding other Karbanos, the same rule is going to pertain. If you see Rashi, Ma Asham Ein Shfir V'Shil Yekadosh, Da Zacharu, because it's a male, Ve'Imachal, right, what side of the roof, when the rooster lays an egg on the top of the roof, which side does the egg roll down? He says, just like for the Asham, since it doesn't have a Shfir or Shilya, it doesn't produce young, therefore the fats and the kidneys of the young would not be brought on the Mizbeach, so too by Karbanos that are female and therefore could produce such young. The same idea. And then Rashi goes on to explain, you can't deduce that from the Karban Ola. We learn it specifically from the Karban Asham. Fine. That's our principle. And back in the Gemara, Kasavar, five lines down, Kasavar, Vlados Kachim, Bava Yasan, Hain Kedoshim. The assumption is that young, born from Karbanos, receive their Kedusha when they are born, not when they are conceived. You want to know when Kedusha begins? It begins at birth. The Danan Efshar Misha Efshar, and we can deduce from the Asham, where there can't be any young, to the case of other Karbanos, where there could well be young, and to say that just like for the Asham, its hypothetical young would not have any Kedusha, so too by other Karbanos, the young produced by other Karbanos would not have any Kedusha. That's what I deduce from the mention of Asham in that Pasuk. We then continue with the next word in the pasuk, and the next word in the pasuk is Vela Miluim, for the Karbanos of the Miluim, the dedication period of the Mishkan as well as the Kohanim. So Miluim. Ma Miluim Mosrehen Bisrefa Vein Balechayim Bimosrehen. Avkol Mosrehen Bisrefa Vein Balechayim Bimosrehen. Just like for the Miluim, if you had leftover dedicated Karbanos, those would be burned, However, there's no such thing as a leftover live animal among those leftovers. So too, for other karbanos, if you have backup that's not a live animal, and then you don't need the backup because you brought your actual karban, right? You dedicate your mincha, and then you say, and here's some flour that I'll use in the event that I don't use the original flour. If I have the backup and I don't end up using the backup, then it has kedusha, and therefore it's going to need to be burned. That's the idea. If you take a look at Rashi, Av kol hakadshim mosrein b'sreifa vein balechayim b'mosrein, it's five lines down in the wider lines. Shimhayu balechayim b'mosrein, if there were living creatures among the leftovers, kigon, for example, yachid shehifrish shnei karbanos la'achrayus chovasa, a person had to bring two karbanos had to bring one karban for his obligation, and instead he dedicated two. One being a backup, Shimye Aved Ha'echad Yiskaper B'Sheni, if one would be lost, he would use the second one. Oum Hifrish Karban V'Avad, or he dedicated the Karban and then he lost the Karban. V'Hifrish Acher Tachav, and then he got the bright idea of dedicating a backup. So at that point, V'Nim Tzarisha, and then you found the first. V'Igri V'Sa'echad Mehen V'Sasheni Nosar, you brought the first one and then the second one ended up being leftovers. Ein Nosar Zeh B'Sreifa. That would not be B'Sreifa, you wouldn't burn it because it's a live animal, it's Balei Chaim. The way that you would burn the nosar of the miluim. So that's what I learned from miluim to other karbanos. And then the last one that was mentioned in the pasuk, ulezevach hashlamim. As far as the karban shlamim, ma shlamim mifaglin umispaglin. Just like the shlamim generate pigul and can become pigul via a thought while bringing something else, I've called pig mifaglin umispaglin. So too for all karbanos. What does he mean by it can generate pigul and it can be made pigul by a thought when bringing something else? So Rashi brings us one explanation. Rashi says mifaglim es hanesachim. They make the libations that you bring with them, the wine and the oil, into pigul as well. Shemchishe bizevach, if while I'm bringing the karban, I do the shchita, I think that I'm going to use it after the proper time. Avan nesachim mifugalin, then the nesachim, the wine and the oil, also become pigul, even though my thought was during the shchita of the animal. And the reason we're going to deduce that from shlamim to other karbanos is because that's where the Torah actually mentions pigul. It's in the laws of the shlamim. That's Rashi. The Tosfos has a different explanation. He says, you don't need to say that we're talking about the Nesachim, we're talking about the Dam, meaning that if I have a thought during one of the Avodos of the blood of the Shlamim, it affects the status of the meat, and if I have a thought about the status of the meat, if I have a pigle thought while processing the meat, that's also going to affect the Dam. So Mefaglin and Mispaglin is about the Dam, not about the Nesachim. End of Brisa. So we ask the question of how I know that the Chatas communicates its status. How do I know other Karbanos, like the Chatas, communicate their status via absorption? When they touch something, that entity will absorb the status of the original Karban. And the answer is, here's a Brisa, which, among other things, teaches me that lesson from Chatas for other Karbanos. End of Brisa. However, I have a second Brisa. Bimasnisa Tana, we're about 10 lines down. The Masnisa Tana Mishmei Rabbi Akiva. They have a Brisa in the name of Rabbi Akiva, which taught it this way. It doesn't go through the entire Pasuk. It gives us alternative lessons from Mincha, Chatas, and Asham. First of all, Mincha. The Pasuk says Mincha. Ma Mincha, it should say Mikadeshes, not Miskadeshes. It should be Mikadeshes Bibilua. I've called Mikadeshes Bibilua. Just like the Mincha will communicate Kedusha to whatever absorbs from it, so too other Karbanos will generate that sort of status in the things that touch them. Well, then why did I need it to say Chatas? V'itzrich l'michtav Mincha. V'itzrich l'michtav Chatas. You needed both. You needed to say Mincha and you needed to say Chatas. D'iyash me'inan Mincha. Had you only said the Mincha, I would have said, you know why the Mincha communicates it? D'aydi d'rekicha mivla'a. Because the Mincha is soft. It's flour. And therefore, everything is just going to get absorbed on contact. Avachatas emalo. But I would have said, regarding meat from a karban, it doesn't necessarily work that way. You don't have the same degree of penetration. The Iashmin and Chatas, and had you only mentioned the Chatas and not the Mincha, I would have said, Mishum de Karir is our addition. I would have said, because it is Karir. Karir, Rashi explains here, The meat is very dense, and therefore the fat will actually enter very well. And the idea here is like kadir, that it actually penetrates within. That's what we have here. You will recall from the Gemara earlier, back in Ayin Tesem at Aleph, it's within the last 3 weeks, and therefore it's within the time when people learning Daf Yomi generally will still remember. They have barely a 3 week limit. But Ayin Tesem at Aleph, we use the term regarding washing saliva off of flax. Right? Remember they talked about the zav and the saliva from the zav that got on the flax. And we use the same term over here to indicate that that you're unable to wash the saliva off. And Rashi there explained that it's not a function of the flax. It's a function of the saliva, the material that's on it. That the saliva enters very powerfully and is hard to remove. The Metargim has the word kadir, to penetrate, like koder. And so it seems also from Menachos Pei Gimel, where they have this as well. So the point is that had you only mentioned chatas, I would have said the absorption rule is unique to chatas and wouldn't apply by a mincha. Av a mincha imalo, but not by a mincha tzricha. So therefore you needed to mention both the mincha and the chatas. Okay, the Torah mentions mincha here in this pasuk from Vayikra Zayin, and it mentions chatas in the laws of chatas, kol asher yigah bivsara yikdash, which means that I still have this word chatas here to teach me something else, right? The word chatas is there to teach me a different lesson. So what is this? What is this pasuk? This pasuk's word chatas teaching me? Chatas, ma chatas eina ba ela min hachulin. First of all, chatas can only come from mundane animals. Meaning that if you try to bring your Meiser Sheni money and buy an animal that way, and now it's Meiser Sheni, and then you want to dedicate it as a chatas, that doesn't work. Ubayom, the chatas is only brought by day. Ubiyado hayamanis, and further, the avoda is done with your right hand, not your left hand. Avkol eina ba ela min hachulin ubayom ubiyado hayamanis. The same rules will apply to other karbanos. So the Gemara now pauses the Braisa. The Braisa is not done, but the Gemara stops in the middle and says, wait a minute. The Chatas Minolan. How do you know these laws that you just mentioned, these three rules, Chulin, Day, and right hand, how do you know them for the Chatas? That you're going to tell me, well, we mentioned the word Chatas, and therefore I'm meant to extrapolate to the other karbanos. The Chatas Minolan. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Kra, Rav Chista says it's a pasuk. The pasuk says the regarding the karbanos of Yom Kippur. Actually, the Kriv Aaron is parachatas asher lo. Aaron will bring the bull chatas that is his own. Mishalo velo mishal tzibur. It has to be his. It can't be from communal property. Velo mishal meiser, and it can't be from meiser sheni property either. So that's how I know, not just for the chatas of Yom Kippur, but for all chataos. And then we mention chatas here when our list of karbanos. That means all karbanos have the same rule. Biyom, on the day, right? On going back to the pasuk of, sorry, we said bayom. Sorry, we said bayom from the brisa. We said it has to be by day. So the Gemara asks, mi biyom tzavo so nafka. I know that already from another pasuk. I don't need you to teach me this from chatos. I know it in general. So he says, yeah, you're right. Kedi nasba. Kedi, when it's not the name of a Tana, we have a case like that, means nothing. Which is a great name to give your kid. But it means for nothing. Like, remember, like, kapara bechdilo ashkechan? We said by karban chatas, you can't have kapara without doing any zrika sadam. So kedi means nothing, for nothing. So he says kedi nasba, you're right. We just brought this along when we were mentioning other characteristics of the chatas. We mentioned this, by the way, correct. Agav urche. Biyado ayamanis. With his right hand, the avodah has to be done with the right hand of the kohen. So he says, "Mid Rabba Barbar Chana Nafka." I knew that from a separate rule, the rule of Rabba Barbar Chana, as follows: "De Amar Rabba Barbar Chana Amar Rish Lakish Kol Makom Shneimar Etzba Ukehuna Eino Ela Yamin." As Rashi explains, Rabba Barbar Chana teaches me that any time the Torah uses the word etzba regarding an avodah, it has to be with your right hand, and any time the Torah says that it has to be a kohen, it has to be the right hand, and our assumption is, as Rashi says, ukasalka daitach o etzba o kahuna. My assumption is either saying etzba teaches me right hand, or saying kohen teaches me right hand, and therefore the imlacham b'chol elu shlo nemar kohen ba'akravasan. There is no such thing as a karban that's listed in the Torah that doesn't say have the kohen do it. So therefore, I already know every time you see a karban in the Torah, it's going to be with your right hand, and I don't need to deduce it from chatas. Right? You follow the question? The question is, that chadas is unnecessary, because whenever the Torah says etzba or kohen, it means I need the right hand. So his answer, the Gemara gives two answers. First answer is kedin asba. Once again, you're right, this was just being dragged in. Our real point was that it has to be from the chulin. Then we just brought this along as well. The iba yis ema, or alternatively, I'll give you another answer. Savala ka Rabbi Shimon. We actually agree with Rabbi Shimon. Da amar etzba lo baya kahuna, because Rabbi Shimon says, when the Torah says etzba, that's enough to tell me that it has to be your right hand. You don't even need to use the word kohen. But also, kahuna baya etzba. The fact that it says kohen does not automatically mean the right hand is required. You do still need to mention etzba. In other words, etzba is the real criteria. That's really the point. And regarding the chatas, as Rashi explains, both are mentioned. V'lakacha kohen is there, midam chatas be'etzba'o. So it mentions kohen and etzba. So this braisa tells me that from chatas, I extrapolate to the other korbanos. Okay. And then the last piece of the braisa, asham. We have a lesson that we learned from Asham. We thought Asham was about the placenta and the afterbirth. I have a different lesson from Asham. Ma Asham atzmosav mutarin, afkol atzmosav mutarin. Just like regarding the carbon Asham, you can use the bones afterwards. Remember we had the discussion about this last week, the week before, about the bones of the Ola, and using the bones to make a shofar. Right, and all sorts of other. Tosis was the one who mentioned the shofar. The Gemara just talked about using the bones in general. So ma asham atzmosav mutarin, just like for the korban asham, you're allowed to use the bones. You can make whatever you want out of it. Okay. Correct. Afkol atzmosav mutarin. So too the bones of other korbanos. If you see Rashi. Ma asham atzmosav mutarin lasses me and kalim ani shamati. Sure, I heard this. Sure, that you can do this. Sure, neach al kohenim, because after all, the kohenim get to eat it. V'nosar ba'atzamos lo shayach ela b'davar haneachal. Nosar is irrelevant. You don't worry. Well, it's leftover carbon. First of all, I don't worry about kedusha. There's no kedusha to it. It's for anybody to eat. Number two, I don't worry about nosar either, because it's not edible. Nosar only applies to that which is edible. So he extrapolates from the asham to other karbanos. Tosfos here...
Yeah. No mach inside the...
There's no mach, correct. And that's the... right. So the that's a point that Tosfos makes here, quoting Pesachim Tzadi Gimel Amid Aleph, where the Mishnah lists Atzamos V'Gidin V'Nosar. So that shows you Nosar is not relevant regarding bones of Karbanos. The Karen Ora has a great question here. He wants to know that if you look in the laws of Psulei HaMukdashin as well as in the laws of Karban Pesach, Psulei HaMukdashin Yud Tes Tes, Karban Pesach Yud Beis, he says that by the Karban Pesach, when you burn the Nosar, there is no need to burn the bones. But he says there's no need to burn them. That sounds like they're not, it sounds like they're not mutter. Right? He says, you burn them, there's no obligation to burn them, but we burn them anyway. It doesn't sound like the bones are actually mutter. So the Mishnah Lamelech explains that Karban Pesach has a unique rule. Since we're told, etzem lo sish bruvo, you're not allowed to break the bones, the concern is, however you dispose of these bones, making them into a clear, whatever, you might break them. So therefore, we burn them by the Karban Pesach. But the rule in general by Karbanos is that the bones do not have that status. Okay, that concludes the first part. The key being that the chatas is mekadesh for an absorption, and so do other Karbanos. And we continue now to Rava, and Rava is going to make an assertion and ask a question, and then make another assertion and ask another question, both regarding dam, one regarding dam chatas and one regarding dam in general. Amar Rava. Rava says, pshita li dam chatas lamata v'dam ola lemala ton kibus. He says, it's obvious to me that if you have a beged, and dam chatas gets on the beged first, it's in the lower layer of the dam that gets on the beged. The blood of the chatas got on the beged. And then afterwards, you got dam ola, blood from an ola, onto the beged. So ton kibus, of course you have to, on the same blood, on the same spot, correct. Ton kibus, so you have to wash the beged, because the dam chatas touched the beged, and now the beged requires washing. So that's easy. Right, that's straightforward. His question is, "Boy, Rava asks, dam ola lamata v'dam chatas lemala mahu? What if it's the other way around? The dam ola got on it, and then the dam chatas only got onto the section that had the dam ola in it already. So, what is going to be the law? Mishum no geyahu." Do I go based on contact? And there's contact here. It touches the baguette, and therefore you have to do it. Odilma, or perhaps Mishum Biluahu, or is it a function of absorption? V'halo bala, and it won't absorb the second dam to come in. We're going to go to Rashi in a moment to see why. But there won't be any absorption. Hadar Pashta, and then he answered it, as we've already said, De'ein Tzunin Kibbus, you don't have to launder it, because we know it's all about Bilua, it's all about absorption, that we already said yesterday. Why won't it absorb the second dam? So Rashi says, he says, Shadam Ola Nivla Babeged. The blood of the Ola is absorbed in the garment. Ukshanafal Dam Chatas Olav Nogeyahu Babeged. And when the Chatas blood falls on it, it will touch the Beged. Aval Eino Nivla, but it won't be absorbed. Dahasavale Bibilua Dam Ola. Because the Beged's already full. It already has absorbed in as much as it can absorb from the blood of the Ola, and nothing else is going to enter. So Rashi seems to be trying to teach me that the reason why the blood of the Chada is not getting in is because the Beged's already absorbed enough. The Dam Zavachim says that Rashi is adding an additional point, Vimetek Lashono. Rashi, in his sweet way of doing things, is teaching me an additional lesson. He's teaching me that the Dam Chatas does not function as a Chatzitza here because it's absorbed. I might have said there's a chatzitza, there's an interruption between the beged and the blood of the chatas. He says the blood of the ola is not considered to be a chatzitza, not the blood of the chatas. The blood of the ola is not considered to be a chatzitza because it's already absorbed, and therefore contact will take place. You follow his? In other words, what was bothering Rashi, and what made Rashi say this, is you're assuming that when the second blood comes in, it touches the beged. But why? There's already blood there. That's a chatzitza. So Rashi is explaining, no, the first blood is absorbed. And the second blood is considered to be is considered to be touching the beged. The Dam Zvachim then asks, why don't I just look at Sukkah Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, which says that min b'mino is not chotzeitz. Right? I should automatically say that the blood of the Ola is not going to be a chatzitza, because it's min b'mino. It says the same type as the blood of the chatas. Unless the answer is the very important distinction that we make between halachic reality and physical reality. And what we mean by that is this. When you tell me min b'mino is not chotzeitz, you don't mean to say that the second item in is really touching the material that's below. When we say min b'mino ein chotzeitz, we mean it's not considered significant as a chatzitza. So in other words, blood gets on this table, and then other blood gets on this touches the same spot. From a physical perspective, the new blood is not touching the table. There really is a chatzitza. It's just that halachically, because it's min b'mino, we say that's not considered a chatzitza. But there are limits to how you can do that. At a certain point you say, but I need, from the perspective of the halacha, I need there to be physical contact. And therefore, even though you'll tell me that halachically this is not a significant chatzitza because it's min b'mino, nonetheless, I have to make sure that the new blood touches the table. I don't care whether halachically it's a significant chatzitza or not. Did the blood touch the table or not? And therefore, says the Dam Zvachim, Rashi needs to make this point. It's not just that the first blood in doesn't count as a chatzitza halachically. The first blood in got absorbed. And therefore, the new blood to come in actually really does touch the beged. It's similar to the discussion of the Chazon Ish regarding sukkah and lavud. Right? Can I use the rule of lavud to pretend that I have a wall when it comes to a sukkah? Or regarding Eruv, it comes up as well. Do I need a physical barrier? Or is it enough to say it's a halachic barrier? Since we treat it as though it was complete, that's good enough. It's the same question. Sometimes you need something physical, and the fact that halachically we don't consider this significant doesn't really help us. So going back to what we said here, Rava's first assertion is, if the blood of the chatas touches below, then for sure you require laundering. If the blood of the ola touches below, then you do not require laundering because the beged absorbed from the ola, and the chatas doesn't get absorbed in the beged. His second point, Amar Rava, Pshita li dam al bigdo chotzeitz. It's obvious to me, this has nothing to do with chatas and ola now, this is a general principle. I have a beged that becomes tamei and needs to go to mikvah. If there's blood on the beged, that's chotzeitz, that's a chatzitza. Vim tabachu eino chotzeitz. But if the person who owns the beged is a butcher, then it's not a chatzitza. Right? Remember the rule. We say regarding chatzitza, interruptions, that if they cover the majority of the surface, they're automatically a chatzitza. If they cover the minority of the surface, then they're only a chatzitza if you're makbid. If you care about this, if you would not want this on your garment, on whatever it is. That's the rule regarding chatzitza on a straightforward level. We're machbit for more than that certain times, but that's not the point here. So he says, if the guy is a butcher, the blood is not covering the majority of the beged. That's our assumption. So it's not chotzeitz. He doesn't care about having blood on the garment. He has blood on the garment all the time. Revev al bigdo chotzeitz. Revev, Rashi says, is called davar hanasuch. Anything that flows, that melts and flows. Kigon shuman, v'chelev, v'shava, fat of different kinds, or wax, something like that. If it gets on the beged, on your sheet that translated as fat, if it gets onto the beged, then that's a chatzitza, right? Remember the Gemara about a Tamar Chacham? A Tamar Chacham who has revev on his clothing should die, it says. Because he's not supposed to walk around with stained clothing. So it's a chatzitza. However, v'mocha revevu, that's what he does for a living. He sells revev, eino chotzeitz, then it's not a chatzitza. And Rava says, I take that as a given. Here's my question. Boy, Rava, dam v'revev al bigdo mahu. What if he has both, blood and revev, on the garment? Im tabachu, typically mishum revev. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? What's your problem? If he's a butcher, so it's a chatzitza because of the revev, the fat. V'i mocha revev, when if he's a revev salesman, typically mishum dam, then the dam is a chatzitza. What are you asking me? Lo, tzricha da'avid havaha. You're right, but my question is, what if he's a guy who works with blood and fat? So do I say achadelo kapit atarti kapit? Do I say he wouldn't mind one of them, but if he has both of them on him, it's really considered disgraceful. Rashi says gnai hulo. It's disgraceful to have that there. Oduma tarti nami lo kapit. Or do I say no, even for both, he's not makbid. Teku. So the Gemara says, don't know. Good question. Okay. New parak. Hanu achtam chatas. New parak. Tvul yom. Tvul yom umuchusr kippurim. I brought you a table there with the set of rules that we're going to deal with here. The question is, fundamentally, in this Mishnah, if you have somebody who is not able to do avoda, for one reason or another, is he able to touch a karban? Is he able to do the avoda? And the answer is going to be no for all of them. And is he able to eat from the karban that night? Later on, when the carbon meat is available. When I put something in parentheses on the chart, it's because it's not stated explicitly in the Mishnah. It's something that's just understood. That's why I put it in parentheses. So, Tvul Yom u'mechusar kippurim, we list together here. The Tvul Yom, he went to mikvah, he's just waiting to become tahor. Mechusar kippurim, a zav, a mitzora, a woman who gave birth, who need to bring certain karbanos in order to be eligible to eat from kachem, even though they're already tahor. So einan cholkin bekachim lechol le'erev. They cannot eat the karbanos that night. That's the rule. I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. Onein is our third category. The person who had somebody die that day. The Gemara is going to talk about the difference between the day of the burial and the day of the death. What if they're not on the same day? But but right now we're going to assume the person Rahman al Itzlan had somebody die that day. He is now an onein. And the rule is
before
the burial. But we'll see. You'll see up to the burial, but we'll see more about this. It's a very good question, actually. Just wait for the Gemara in the next couple of days and you'll see. It's a very good question. No geya, so he can touch the karban, he's not tamei. The eino makriv. However, he cannot do avoda. The eino cholek lechol erev, and he doesn't get any piece of the karban that night. That's the onin. And then the last category, bali mumin. If he has a blemish, bein bali mumin over and bein bali mumin kavu, and whether it's a temporary or permanent mum, cholkin v'ochlin, we know he can touch the karban. I put it in parentheses because the Mishnah didn't state it explicitly. We know he cannot do avoda. However, cholkin v'ochlin, he can get part of the karban, avolo makriven. He just can't do the avoda. End of first part of the Mishnah. So a couple of footnotes there on the issue of the Mechusar Kippurim. First of all, Tosfos points out, based on Chagiga Chathalef and based on Zvachim Tzadites, that the Mechusar Kippurim requires Tevila. He has to go to Mikvah Midirabanan, but he does not require Harev Shemesh. He doesn't need to wait for sunset. So why did we say here Ad HaErev? So his answer is that LaErev is only relevant for the Tevul Yom. LaErev is not really about the Mechusar Kippurim. The Mechusar Kippurim, the truth is not a nighttime issue. But the Taras HaKodesh asks a great question. And I like the fact this is a quick daf today so we can actually take a minute to discuss it. Because it's a very important principle. He says if the immersion in the mikvah is only derabanan, then why is it that he can't eat from the karban? Midel Raisa, he should be eligible. Right? Midoraisa, he doesn't require tevila. He has to bring his karbanos and then he's fine. The same question is going to come up when we're going to talk about an onen derabanan on Daf Tzadites. So his answer is that where the Torah itself excludes certain participants, like the tamei, right, or like the onen deoraisa, when the rabbanan disqualifies somebody, it's modeled on. It's like ke'in deoraisa tikkun. It's modeled on the biblical precedent, and those are considered non-suitable as well. It's like the fact that if I have a sukkah and the Torah says to me this sukkah is kosher, but midrabbanan we don't accept this sukkah. So I can't sit in the sukkah and say, well, midoraisa, I fulfilled the mitzvah. It doesn't work that way. The rabbanan are the ones who define what is an eligible sukkah. So far, so good? So therefore, the rabbanan say this person is ineligible to eat from the karban, he's ineligible to eat from the karban. But then there's a problem. Because of the case in sukkah chav beis, of somebody who makes a sukkah on the back of an animal. Okay? There we say, if you create a sukkah on the back of an animal, it's kosher for chol hamoed. But it's possible for Yom Tov because you can't climb on the animal. You're not allowed to get up on the animal. It's part of the gzera against climbing trees. So, right. So the so therefore you can't...
Sukkah is not good. They're just saying you can't access it.
Right, but therefore they consider it to be no good. They actually view it as a psul in the sukkah because you can't climb up. It's kosher for the rest. Now, here's the key. This is going to address whether it's possible or not. The Rabbanan say it's kosher for the rest of, you know, for Chol HaMoed. It's just not kosher for Yom Tov and Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says, since it's disqualified for some of the days, it's disqualified for all of them. Even though the disqualification is only a derabanan. Rabbi Meir is the one who says, no, it's kosher on Chol HaMoed. And we follow Rabbi Meir in practice. So why don't I say that the rabbinic disqualification of the sukkah should extend to the deoraisa? Why don't I use the same principle here? The rabbinic disqualification of the mechusar kapara before he goes to mikvah extends to disqualifying for karbanos. The rabbinic disqualification of the sukkah, like Rabbi Yehuda says, should make it possible for all of Sukkot.
Is the time condition different than other conditions?
The Taras HaKodesh gives me a different approach. It's an interesting idea.
Just saying, Sukkot, Tishvu, Kim, Taduru, you've got to be able to live in it. Since you can't access it, you can't live in it. So there's nothing wrong with the structure.
Right. So the Taras HaKodesh has more cases, more test cases. And those principles, while good regarding Sukkot, won't help me for the other ones. His principle that he comes up with is that when you're dealing with the Sukkot, there is no such thing as a sukkah which can satisfy the deoraisas for some days and not for others. So I don't have a baseline. I don't have a deoraisa example of a sukkah which is no good for some of the days, and therefore I'm going to extend it to make it usur for all the days. And therefore, when it comes to the derabanans, I won't apply the principle of it's disqualified for some of the days, therefore disqualified for all of them. You need a deoraisa, like what we have here. We say that there are certain people who are disqualified from eating from the karban mid-deoraisa, like the Tvul Yom, for example. Therefore, even those who are pasul only midirabanan are going to be pasul even that night after they should have become kosher. That's the idea. It's modeled on the deoraisa. Okay, let's finish the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kol she'eino roi lavoda, this is the second half of the Mishnah, Kol she'eino roi lavoda eino cholek babasar. If you're unfit to do the avoda, you don't get a part of the meat of the karban.
Balmum is not there.
Ah, hang in there. V'chol she'ein lo basar, ein lo ba'oros. If he can't have the meat, he can't have the hide either. Afilu, even if, tamei bish'as zrikas damim, v'tar bish'as hekter chalavim. Even if he is tamei at the zrika, but he's tar by the time they put the fats on him, is bayach, eino cholek babasar. He cannot have from the meat. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hamakriv es dam hashalamim v'sachel v'bnei Aaron. Lo siya shokayamin lamana. The one who brings the blood of the shlamim and the chelev from bnei Aaron, he will get the shokayamin lamana. He gets the portion. So you have to be eligible for hakrava. So that works as far as some of them. It does not work as far as all of them. And that's what the Gemara is going to have to challenge when it discusses this, the fact that it doesn't seem to apply to the case of the Baal Mum. Okay.